Welcome to Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 26th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host today. Margie Hamburger will be here on the show to tell us about October happenings at the City Museum. We'll speak with Belle Mickelson about Teen Fiddle and Guitar Camp this weekend. Rabbi Dov Gartenberg will be on the show to tell us about National Mental Illness Awareness Week. And AK Folk Festival board member Sergey Morrison will be here to highlight Falltoberfest this weekend. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Next is National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A First Nation in northern British Columbia has been granted the right to appeal the Canadian government's approval of the Northern Gateway Pipeline Project. The $7 billion pipeline would carry resources from the Alberta oil sands to the British Columbia coast. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The Federal Court of Appeal agreed to hear the legal challenge from the Gahatla First Nation. The band filed the court action in July, not long after the federal cabinet in Ottawa granted approval for the controversial pipeline project. Native and environmental groups have been fighting the proposed project for years. The Gahatla is challenging the review panel report that the government based its decision for approval on. It claims the government failed to provide reasonable accommodation and consultation over Aboriginal rights and title. Roseanne Kyle is the lawyer for the First Nation. She says oil tankers and other vessels linked to the project would travel through the Gahatla territory in very narrow channels along the coast.
Areas where Gahatla people continue to harvest, rely on marine resources for their livelihoods, and over which they have title and self-government rights. So they're very happy to be able to proceed with their challenges in court.
The First Nation says it's unlikely the appeal court will hear the case for months because several other lawsuits have been filed and other groups are involved. The government's approval of the pipeline came with more than 200 conditions. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A senior center in Bethel, Alaska, is set to close this week and move to a temporary location. As KYUK's Charles Enoch reports, some elders are worried about what the change will mean for them.
As lunchtime nears, elders gather at the Chief Eddie Hoffman Senior Center in downtown Bethel. As seniors line up for their meal, Elder Luther Oscar says he loves the time he gets to socialize with his friends.
Thanks for the senior center.
I started coming to the senior center to enjoy the fellowship, also to enjoy a meal with other elders.
The meal is one of the last the seniors will have together in the building. Bethel's tribe, Urutararmit Native Council, manages the senior center program. This summer they announced that they could no longer afford to stay there. Elder Lucy Jacobs has been a regular for many years. She says her worst fear about the senior center closing is loneliness.
I'm afraid I'll be lonely again. I don't want the senior center closed. Some of us are always lonely in our homes while our families are gone. When all of us are here together, we are happy.
But ONC officials say the cost to run the program totaled over $600,000 last year, and that's just too much. Zach Brink is the executive director of ONC.
The expenses needed to take care of the building are getting too high now that the building is getting so old. But along the way, we'll look at options for a new site.
It is unclear what the city will do with the old site other than close it off for the winter. Brink was uncertain on what level of services ONC can provide in the temporary location. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
On Friday, the Navajo Nation Supreme Court reinstated grievances filed against presidential candidate Chris Deschini and sent the case back to the Office of Hearing and Appeals. The case involves election grievances. Petitioners questioned Deschini's fluency of the Navajo language and claim he misrepresented his qualifications. Candidates for president are required to fluently speak and understand Navajo. Out of 17 candidates, Deschini and former Navajo Nation President Joe Shirley Jr. won the August primary. They're set to face off in November. The High Court said the grievances should not have been dismissed by the Office of Hearing and Appeals, which has until Friday to hold a hearing. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
National Native News brings you information from around Indian Country and the world. Find out how to reach our listeners while also supporting this program by visiting nativenews.net.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 29th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host here, and in the studio now is the curator of public programs at the Juno Douglas City Museum, Miss Margie Hamburger. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you. Why don't we start? Tell us a little bit about the curator of public programs. That sounds really fun.
It is really fun because it's kind of the simple way I say it is it's my job to kind of connect the museum with the people.
Okay.
So whether that's publicity, whether that's designing programming to get people to come in or to take the information about Juno history or culture, you know, out to the people, school groups, school tours, lecture series, classes, and talking on the radio, things like that.
Sure, and you've been there for about a year?
Yeah, a little
right?
over a year now.
And you enjoy it?
I do.
Like, right?
I do. It's really fun.
Well, good. Speaking about public programs, you got some fun stuff coming up.
Yeah, we have actually a busy month. It sort of seems like the tourists are gone. We had a great summer, but now we can really turn off full attention on our local community. So we got a lot of stuff coming up. First thing is this Friday. It is First Friday. We don't have new exhibits, but I really want to encourage people, if they haven't seen the exhibits we've got up right now, particularly the empty chair, and then this exhibit called Outside My Window, which are these beautiful fabric quilt. Well, they call them quilts, but they're just fabric art that are done by locals. So if you haven't seen those, get in and see them. They'll be up for one more month. So we will be open for First Friday. It's not a new show, but a chance to
Very
see
worthy.
Those exhibits. Yeah, definitely. But we do have a new thing the following day. We're starting this thing called First Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah. So Saturday morning, this will be our first one, so that's October 4th, right?
I think, yep.
I started piloting this thing I've been calling History Time,
mm-hmm.
with the story part in there, History Time. And I did some this summer, and that was fun, sort of a story time event, but with a history twist.
Okay.
And so we've moved that to a First Saturday model for this fall and winter and spring, from 11 o'clock on October 4th, geared towards families, kids of all ages who can sit and listen to books and talk about historical things. And then there'll be some sort of a hands-on activity either inside the museum, something to play with or explore, or sometimes take you outside the museum as well.
Oh, that sounds great. And that starts at 11?
That starts at 11.
And what time does that go until?
It kind of depends on the kids and the group, but no more than an hour. So 45 minutes to an hour. Is the experience. We'll probably sit down for about half an hour, and then we'll have the activity following that.
And the youngest kids that can come are ones that can kind of sit down?
I've had some, you know, sometimes there's a younger sibling who really is a babe in arms or
right.
Whatever, but it's a chance for families to come together and have that experience. And then concurrent with that, I've got some gals who are members of the Capital City Quilters who are going to be in residence that morning between 10 and 12, and they're going to actually be working on some of their fabric creation, some of their quilting, embroidery, applique stuff. And so they'll be demonstrating that. They're there for people to talk to, ask questions, see what they're doing.
That sounds great.
So that's all going to be happening on First Saturday.
Oh, fun. Okay. And then you were also talking about the artist applications.
Right. Yes. I do want to spread that word. So every year we have some of the exhibits in our temporary galleries feature local artists or artist group, like this Outside My Window quilt show, for example, is an example of that. Some in the past, we had M.K. McNaughton had a show this spring. Toby Harbinuck had a show this past year. So those are some people who have approached, submitted an application, approached the museum with an idea for an exhibit. And we've got a couple of slots we're looking to fill in late 2015 and early 2016.
All right.
So if there's either a solo artist who has an idea, or a group of artists who kind of have some sort of thematic idea, we're interested in those ideas and, particularly ones that align with our mission, which is really to represent Juneau and represent Juneau's history, culture, values, community spirit, those kinds of things.
Okay. Not to put you on the spot or anything, but thinking about some of the shows that you've had recently and thinking about who might apply for shows in the future, mm-hmm. are there any holes that you'd love to see somebody, some sort of art focusing around one sort of genre or anything like that?
You know, that's a good question. And some of it's just, you know, my personal opinion. I think we've had a lot of, you know, two-dimensional work. It'd be fun mm-hmm. to see some three-dimensional mm-hmm. artists out there
okay.
who are interested in exhibiting their work. I know there's going to be a big theme for next summer's exhibit that we are mounting is a lot about photography. So it might be fun to see some photographers, if they're interested in that, or I'm always interested in things that are a little bit eclectic. You know, again, a group that has some maybe a thematic idea
yeah.
that might include a number of artists. It might be a little overwhelming for a single artist to come up with, you know, 15 pieces or whatever fills the gallery, but maybe they've got a group of people that wants to work around a theme. That's always fun.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting, too, how you are doing these group presentations, you know, this group art.
Right, right.
You know, like the quilts that are up there, the Outside My Window
uh-huh.
project right now. What a fun way to get people together making art.
Right, right. And, oh, speaking of making art, I should just mention, because a lot of people are starting to ask, every year we do this 12 by 12 exhibit.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to happen in March this year.
Okay.
Anyway, the theme is H2O color, watercolor, which can be expressed literally or just thinking about water and colors. So I just want to put that out there, and people can find more information about that at our website if they wanted to start thinking about what their submission is going to be.
Okay. speaking of submission and that application that we were just talking about, that's all online, right?
Yep, yep. They can get online, or they can stop by the museum or, you know, call us up.
What's your website again?
It's www.juneau.org/museum.
Okay.
Yeah.
Coffee and collections.
Right. So we're resuming those for this season again.
Okay.
Our first one is not this Saturday, but the 11th, October
11th.
Second Saturday. Although that one kind of bumps around
right,
sometime
okay.
during the month, depending usually around who's the presenter and what their availability is and stuff. It doesn't always stick with the same Saturday of the month. But I've got a panel of people who were instrumental in making the Empty Chair Memorial happen. So they're going to come and share their story about how they came to decide that our city needed a memorial to recognize the interment of our Japanese-American friends and neighbors, and how they made that dream sort of come to reality. So they're going to be talking on the 11th, starting at 10:30. Coffee and
That's
collections
going to be interesting. It
should be really interesting. Mary Abo and Margie Shackelford are couple of women who grew up here as young children. Mary is a Tanaka, so she was part of the Tanaka family who were interred, although she was a very small child at the time. And they, in their adult years, they live in the Seattle area, but they're going to be up here for about a weekend, so I kind of snagged them to come and be at the museum with us.
And can you give us a little teaser for folks that haven't heard of the Empty Chair Project? Just give us a brief summary of it.
Yeah, well, the Empty Chair is actually installed. It's a memorial at Capitol Park. And we have an exhibit at the museum, which, again, is up for one more month. But it's telling the story of World War II and the evacuation of Japanese Americans from the whole of the West Coast of the United States due to executive order, a very, unfortunate event. And in Juneau, to our credit, we kept our community members in our hearts and supported them throughout this ordeal and welcomed them back with open arms when they came back. And so this memorial commemorates, you know, the history in general and also the specific story of how Juneau dealt with that situation.
And that's up for one more month. And if you want to get some detailed information, you can go to the Coffee and Collections
mm-hmm.
two Saturdays from now, October 11th.
Exactly.
10:30.
Right, and drink coffee. I have to mention our sponsor, Heritage Coffee, that gives us nice hot, piping hot coffee.
Oh, well, it does sound like you have some great stuff going on in October, Margie.
We do.
Yeah. Anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, there's tons more in November, so I want to, you know, I'll be back and tell you all about that in November. But I do want to mention we've had a sale in our museum shop all the month of September, and we've only got two more days of September. Well, I guess it's tomorrow is the last day of September.
I guess maybe, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, whatever the last day of September is the last day, but it's a 25% off sale. So those people who are, like, really good about thinking ahead to the holidays and, you know, you get some good deals on nice Juno memorabilia, books, beautiful art cards, things like that. So pop in and do some shopping.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Curator of Public Programs at the City Museum, Margie Hamburger, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome.
This is Bird Note. It's a cool morning in late September. Two young great horned owls are roosting alongside their parents, perched out of view in a dense stand of trees. Compared to the adults, the owlets are a richer brown, and their cat-like ear tufts are a bit shorter. Otherwise, the four birds look alike. Compared to many birds, young great horned owls remain with their parents a long time. Robins, for example, are fending for themselves only 6 weeks after they hatch. Our owlets are now almost 7 months old. These two hatched in early March, from eggs laid in late January. The mother incubated the eggs for a month, never once leaving the nest. During that month, the male great-horned owl was the sole provider. By April, both parents were hunting through the night. They airlifted in meal after meal to the rapidly growing young. Everything from delectable ducks to smelly skunks. But for the last 2 weeks, the adults have not fed the young, and they are hearing about it. Today could be the final day the family group roosts together. For any night now, the young owls will strike out on their own, moving beyond the home territory of their birth. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Foot band there for your listening enjoyment. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 26, 2014. And now with us on the telephone is Ms. Belle Mickelson, here to tell us about the Teen Fiddle and Guitar Camp. Belle, how are you?
Hey, great, Scott. I'm doing fine.
Well, it's great to hear your voice, and we're excited that you and Mike and friends are going to be down here this weekend. It couldn't be better timing.
Yeah, I know. It's very serendipitous, I think, that we have the Folk Fest fundraiser at the same time we have a music camp.
Yeah. So this is the Dance with the Spirit music camp, Teen Fiddle and Guitar Camp, Dancing with the Spirit, excuse me. Can you tell us about it, the history, how it came to be?
Well, about 20 years ago, I was a 4-H agent in Cordova, and I, you know, knew that 4-H agents, 4-H clubs, they did camps, and we'd been doing science camps, and I heard about a music camp at Anchorage that was really successful. And
okay.
So I started one here in Cordova. And after 5 years, I knew every town should have a camp like this because it was so much fun. And so we put together six of the counselors, because instead of me just telling you, hey, these camps are great, listen to the kids that come out of them. And it was like they named themselves Barefoot Bluegrass, and the next thing you know, they had won Telluride and ended up staying together, this teenage band that started out 14 to 17 years old, ended up staying together, a couple of them for 14 years, and
yeah.
Five of them stayed together for 9 years. So anyway, my son was in it, I guess, for 10 and a half years. And
Mike Mickelson,
yeah. Yeah, so he's our lead instructor, and you know, as a professional musician and somebody that's great with kids, he has his elementary teaching certificate, and you know, has taught hundreds of these camps. We just really got excited about it, and I had heard, you know, that knowing about people in the villages not having music programs, talking to some elders, actually in Galena, about 20 years ago, what their things were going on, and to hear how concerned they were about suicide and drugs and alcohol, and I thought, what could I do? And then I started realizing that music totally changes kids' lives.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And you've been doing this camp now for about 8 years, is that right?
Right, yeah, we've been doing this camp in the villages. It's basically a traveling camp. We mostly go to schools and stay for a week in a community. And usually they're kind of small schools, so we usually teach the elementary kids in the morning and then junior high school in the afternoon. At the end of the week, we have a community concert, a square dance. We teach square dancing as well as playing fiddle, guitar, mandolin, bass, banjo, that kind of thing. And here in Juneau, we'll be teaching ukulele as well.
Okay. And I think you were telling me earlier, you've been to 27 villages, is that correct?
Well, I haven't personally, but our program has. And most of them we go to at least once a year. So we've averaged like 20 weeks in the villages over the past few years.
Wow. And you know, I think the Barefoot, I want to call them kids, but of course they're not kids anymore. I think they're a great example of what exposing folks to music at a young age can be. Do you have other examples of why you keep doing this and why it's important to bring music to young people?
Well, I just noticed that, Juneau, you've got to admit, it has such great music possibilities and
mm-hmm.
lots of music teachers. But out in these villages, honestly, we might be the only music all year that comes, that works with the kids. And, I was up in Circle, Alaska, a couple years ago, and we hadn't been there for like a year and a half, but we walked in the door and those elementary kids were like jumping up and down and they were so excited to see us. And, you know, I just thought we as adults need to do more for things that make kids happy. And, you know, you're really getting kids into a lifetime sport. I mean, you know, honestly, there's like four chords and you can play hundreds of songs on a guitar. So in a week, we can actually get kids started enough that they can go on their own. And oftentimes, and in fact, almost all the time, there's a really good musician in every village. And so they can help the kids keep going. And even with fiddle, you know, of course, in Juneau, kids have a chance to take orchestra and do lessons and so forth. But we have this color-coded fiddle tab that kids can learn in a few days, you know, how to play fiddle and play, by the end of the week, be playing 10 or 15 songs on a fiddle.
Belle, I noticed in your title is the word spirit, so it's Dancing with the Spirit. Are you affiliated with any religion, or is this just music-based?
Well, I am an Episcopal priest.
Okay.
And, but when we go to the schools, it's just, you know, like a traditional music program. Because we are doing bluegrass, we do a certain amount of gospel songs. And actually, this weekend we'll probably be doing more than we usually do because we got some of our funding from the Faith Into Tomorrow. It's a foundation or through the Episcopal Church. And the Episcopal Church is having their annual convention in Juneau this weekend. So, but we'll be teaching some fiddle tunes and, you know, just general tunes that kids really like, you know. In the villages, we do lots of Hank Williams and Johnny Cash, and so we,
nice.
We definitely do that. And, you know, popular music. Mike, even though he's bluegrass is his most favorite kind of music, he can do rock and roll with the best of them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We'll be bringing his electric guitar, and so I'm sure whatever kind of music kids are interested in. I mean, I think that's the great thing about these kind of instruments. You can take and go for it. And
sure.
One thing that we're really hoping to do is focus on harmony singing.
Okay.
And I know there's a lot of great vocals programs going in Juneau and kids interested in music, and I would highly encourage them to come to the camp and really work on their harmony singing.
Okay. Speaking of the kids, what's your target age group for this?
This is 6th through 12th grade.
Okay.
We're calling it a teen music camp. We want it to be for, it can be beginning, intermediate, advanced students. I think the thing is with teenagers, kids 6th grade on up, they can just learn so fast. So that
right.
Even if your friend has never played guitar before, they can quickly become good enough to be in your band.
And also, so let's see, it starts on Friday, is that correct?
Right after school.
Okay.
From 3:30 to 8 p.m. We'll have a little potluck dinner for the kids, and then we'll encourage them to go to the Folk Fest fundraiser after that. And then on Saturday, the classes are from 1 to 6, and then on Sunday, it's from 1:30 to 7:30. And we're from 4 o'clock on, we'll be working with the kids that have been coming to the camp as well as the youth groups. There's from different churches that are also going to be participating in it. And kids also have a chance to be Saturday night to play at the final convention church service out at St. Brendan's.
Okay, out in the valley.
Yeah, out in the valley. And the exciting thing is it's going to be all in Gwich'in Athabaskan.
All right.
So it's, if you haven't heard it before, it's really powerful. And I know one of the things among Native peoples here in Alaska is trying to learn and keep their language going. And I think music is a really powerful tool for keeping your culture. And so the Reverend Trimble Gilbert from Arctic Village and his sister Florence Newman will be there along with other Gwich'in speakers, and the kids will have a chance to play along with them and learn some of these songs in Gwich'in, and we'll also be playing for the St. Brendan's service on Sunday morning at 10:30. And so those are kind of like optional parts of the camp.
Okay.
If people would like to come, but Mike and I will be there, and as well as Trimble and his sister Florence, who grew up on the land. I mean, they lived in tents at 40 below and the total subsistence lifestyle, and
right.
You know, have amazing tales to tell about caribou hunting and fishing and just living off the land. And it's kind of like shaking hands with history, as well as meeting some phenomenally outstanding people.
That sounds interesting. The classes, though, are downtown, right, at Holy Trinity?
Right. The classes are all at Holy Trinity. And, and we'll have snacks and food and all kinds of things to keep us going. And we'll be teaching square dancing. I'm a square dance caller, and Mike loves it because it's his chance to play the fiddle. But he might play the guitar, too. Amy Houck, who teaches ukulele and plays all the bluegrass instruments, she'll be teaching with us, too. And hopefully we'll have some other local musicians jumping in and helping us teach the kids.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. It's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's for 6th to 12th graders. You can take fiddle, guitar, mandolin, bass, ukulele, and you learn about harmony singing and a lot of beginning, intermediate, or advanced, and a lot of the other bonuses that Belle highlighted here for us today. It sounds like fun, Belle. Thanks for bringing this down.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a pay-as-you-go fundraiser, or pay-as-you-can. We're hoping to raise a little money for our village program, and we're hoping to go to a lot of the villages in southeast Alaska as well. And so if you can contribute, help us out with helping fund our program. So it's pretty exciting. We're going to Yakutat the last week in October, but we'd like to go to other places here in southeast.
Okay. Where should people go if they want to sign up or get more information, Belle?
You can contact Allison at Holy Trinity, 586-3532, or email her at holytrinity@gci.net, or you can call me. My cell is 388-3347. And my name, Belle Mickelson, B-E-L-L-E Mickelson, M as in Mike, MICKELSON@gmail.com.
Okay.
And we have a pretty simple one-page registration form for everyone to fill out. And, it should be tons of fun and a chance to really get involved and learn fast. We have this color-coded system, so you can learn your chords really fast, and including the fiddle tab.
Okay. Well, it sounds great. And for our listeners, if you need those numbers or emails, you can always we post our shows, the Juno Afternoon, here online at ktoo.org under local programs. You can go and click on that. I'll have it up by probably 4:15. But this camp sounds great, Belle. Thank you for talking with us today. I think maybe a perfect song to go out on. It's Mike doing Deep River Blues.
Oh, awesome. Well, thanks a lot, Scott.
You're welcome, Belle. If you want to sing and play like this guy, you should go to this camp this weekend. Thanks, Belle. We'll see you in a few days.
Okay, sounds great, Scott. Bye.
Let it rain, let it pour, let it rain a whole lot more, because I've got them deep river blues. Let that rain drive right on, let those waves sweep along, I've got them deep river blues. My old gal's a good old pal, but she walks like a waterfowl. when I get them deep river blues. There ain't no one to cry for me. All the fish go on a spree when I get them deep river blues. She's gonna float, 'cause I got them deep river blues. I'm a-going back to Muscle Shoals. The fishing's better there, I'm told, because I got them deep river blues. My boat sinks with me, I'll go down, well, don't you see, 'cause I got them deep river blues. And now I'm going to say goodbye, and if I sink, just to let me die, I've got them deep river blues. Let it rain, let it pour, let it rain a whole lot more, I've got them deep river blues. Let that drive out on, let those waves just to sweep along, I've got them deep river blues.
Our general election is coming up November 4th. Last year's voter turnout in Juneau was dismal at 14%. Not registered to vote? The deadline to register is October 5th. If you want to have a say in who our next governor is and whether or not the minimum wage is raised, marijuana legalized, and a law is passed before large-scale mining in Bristol Bay is approved, be sure you're a registered voter. You can register at elections.alaska.gov. Make your voice heard. It's your civic duty.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, September 29th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host, and now in the studio with me is NAMI's Rabbi Dov Gartenberg. Thank you for coming down today.
Great to be here.
Yeah. So you're the executive director of NAMI, is that correct?
Yes, of NAMI Juneau, the Juneau affiliate, and it means the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And we've been here since the early 80s, so we like to remind people that we are the parents of JAMI. We're not in this JAMI, by the way, but mm-hmm. we helped create JAMI and also the Polaris House and many other things.
Okay, and let's see, it's National Mental Illness Awareness Week, and you have some events coming up, and we'll get to those in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But why don't you start, tell us a little bit about yourself, and tell us about the organization here in Juneau and what all you do.
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm a parent of a child with a mental illness. He lives with bipolar. And when he was just beginning to show early onset, and we didn't know what it was, we did go to NAMI for a family support group.
Okay.
And it was tremendously important and helpful for us. So I've always had a connection to NAMI as a family member. And then when we moved to Juneau, the NAMI position was open, and I felt this is a great organization. It was a real privilege to serve it, so I became the executive director of the affiliate here. And so I'm helping other family members and also people who live with mental illness to get the support and resources and that they need to be able to live a good and hopeful life.
I read a statistic earlier that 1 in 4 adults lives with a mental illness and 1 in 10 children. Does that sound about right?
Yes. 1 in 4 adults experience some form of mental illness. Sometimes it's situational. Sometimes it's more severe in the country. And then, and also early onset mental illness is a very serious issue all across the world. I mean, the United States has a NAMI, which is very fortunate because we have a grassroots organization that advocates for people living with mental illness and their family members.
And you mentioned you became associated with NAMI with your own son at a support group. You still have support groups here in Juneau, and tell us about those and other services you provide.
Sure. You can find a lot about our services at our website, namijuneau.org, but I'll just do a quick review. We have support groups for family members and for people living with mental illness. We have courses for family members called Family to Family, which is the most well-known NAMI program. And we're starting programs for young families called NAMI Basics, that is families that have early onset mental illness with their children, and for peer-to-peer, which is a program for people living with mental illness, an educational course on all the different dimensions of self-care and all issues that come with living with a mental illness.
Okay. I was just thinking, going back to your son for a minute and talking about things like early onset, it seems to me like identifying and, you know, helping a family and a young person figure out what they have. What was that process like for you? And if there's somebody listening right now that, you know, they think, oh, maybe I should get some counseling or figure some things out, what might be the first step for them?
Let me try and get at the essence of it.
Okay.
As we saw our son really go through a very difficult period, we weren't sure what was going on, but he didn't seem like himself.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed depressed. We didn't know what it was. So he was also withdrawn, and we sought help. We certainly sought professional help, but what was really wonderful about NAMI is we found other parents who were going through similar things or had gone through, and they could give us a little bit of a roadmap.
And you didn't feel alone.
Oh, we didn't feel alone. And that's so many families that have a loved one with mental illness feel very isolated and alone. And we're really here to tell you that you are not.
Okay.
And so that's one main reason for connecting with NAMI.
Okay.
And maybe I'll tell you about what's going to happen with the Mental Illness Awareness Week.
Please do.
So there are three things to know about Mental Illness Awareness Week, which is from October 5th through Saturday, October 11th. It's a national observance. I'll go backwards to forwards. So on October 11th, we have the NAMI Juneau Extra Tough 5K Walk Run, you can help support NAMI and their efforts to help people with mental illness come to the run and register. There are posters and flyers all over town. You can go to our website to see how to register or just come. That's at 1 o'clock on Saturday the 11th at the River Bend Covered Playground.
Okay.
And then the second event is on October 7th, which is our Inside Passages forums on mental health and wellness. That's in the evening at 5:15 at Bartlett Administrative Building. We do each month a talk on some aspect of mental health and wellness, and that's going to be on what is mental health first aid. This is a sort of new type of program. It's being introduced all around the world. Just like there is first aid for people, you know, what you see may come across, God forbid, in a car accident or, you know, someone having a heart attack or there is mental illness, health first aid for people who have maybe suicidal or may show signs of psychosis. And so this is we're going to talk about what this training is, and we'll be offering, there'll be trainings during the year in Juneau. And that's the 7th. That's a Tuesday night. And then the first event of the week is a nice event at Alaska Club is sponsoring an indoor bike ride from 8 to 10 a.m. on Sundays at the Valley Alaska Club at the Spinning Room. You don't have to be a member of Alaska Club to come, and you rent a bike, and the money goes to NAMI Juneau. So,
see, I pictured you all in the gym, but no, why would you need to do that when you can just be on a stationary bike?
So those are and you can, of course, find these on our website, too. But we have concentrated activities during this week for something we do all year round.
And again, your website is namijuneau.org?
www.namijuneau.org.
Okay. And this is all, these events are all part of National Mental Illness Awareness Week. And they go from October 5th to the 11th. And again, at that website, you can find out all the details about all of this.
And many more.
And many more. Rabbi Dov Gartenberg, thank you so much for your time today. And is there anything else you want to add?
Sure. I just say that sometimes it's hard when you are a person living with mental illness or your loved one you're caring for a loved one to take the step to get help, whether it's certainly getting mm-hmm. a provider to help, but also finding other people are going through this. And I know for some people it's a big step to take. But once the step is taken, I think it makes a huge difference. I think many people involved with NAMI will testify to that. So if you're one of those people who's having this situation and doesn't know where to turn or is hesitant to even, you know, admit to it to other friends, this is a really good and safe place to come to and find hope.
Great. Rabbi, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 29th of September, 2014. It's the birthday of the physicist Enrico Fermi, born in Rome, 1901, who built the first functioning nuclear reactor. He might have discovered nuclear fission back in the 1930s in Italy. His work might have fallen into the hands of the Nazis, but he defected to the United States, got involved in the Manhattan Project, moved to the University of Chicago, and built the first nuclear reactor there on a squash court under the stands of the university football field. Conducted the first nuclear reaction on the morning of December 2nd, 1942. And news was flashed to Washington, a coded message that said the Italian navigator has landed in the New World. It was on this day, 1947, that trumpeter Dizzy Gillespie played at Carnegie Hall in New York with Ella Fitzgerald and Charlie Parker, a big moment in the history of jazz and especially bebop. Gillespie had been experimenting with bebop, which used dissonant chords, had complicated rhythms, lots of improvisation. When he played in Cab Calloway's swing band, Calloway didn't care for it. He told Gillespie, quit playing that Chinese music. Gillespie was playing at a club in Harlem, Minton's Playhouse, with Parker and Thelonious Monk, Kenny Clarke. Gillespie in his beret and goatee and dark sunglasses. Duke Ellington, though, gave Gillespie a nice blurb for the concert program that night. He said, this is 1947, and you have all these wonderful musical minds, progressive minds, active minds that have to be respected. Why should music stand still? Nothing else stands still. Dizzy Gillespie went on to perform at Carnegie Hall more than 50 times. It was on this day, 1920, that Joseph Horn Company in Pittsburgh started selling ready-to-use radio receivers for $10 apiece so that people could pick up the signal of station KDKA in Pittsburgh, the first commercially licensed radio station in the United States. It's believed to be the birthday of Cervantes, Miguel de Cervantes, born near Madrid, 1547, the author of Don Quixote, about the middle-aged landowner who stays awake at night reading books about chivalry and sets off on his skinny horse to perform heroic feats. Don Quixote, who gave us the word quixotic. And it was on this day in 1881, the first in a series of letters by the naturalist John Muir appeared in the San Francisco Evening Bulletin. He was on a cruise exploring Alaska. He called the Alaskan landscape a terrestrial manifestation of God. He said, climb the mountains and get their good tidings. Nature's peace will flow into you as sunshine flows into trees. The winds will blow their own freshness into you, and the storms their energy, while cares will drop off like autumn leaves. Here's a poem for today, an untitled poem by Athena Kildegard. We drove across high prairie, the Mississippi behind us, nothing ahead for miles but sky, a loamy sky, thick enough to put a trowel into, but off to the south, clouds pulled away from one another as if to stand back, take a long look. And in that space, what light was left of the sun, already gone below the horizon, flowed up and held there, and we did too, hold our breaths at the sudden beauty. A poem by Athena Kildegard from Cloves and Honey, published by Noden Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The Alaska Folk Festival and KRNN proudly present Falltoberfest, October 3rd and 4th at the Rockwell Ballroom. Six bands and two nights of music, dancing, food, and good cheer. Featuring the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band, Honky Tonk Habit, the Overby Family Band, Tramwreck, Rumblefish, and Cold Country. Enjoy three bands each night at this all-ages event. All proceeds benefit the Folk Festival and KRNN. Tickets available at the Jack, Hearthside, and akfolkfest.org.
To a Juno afternoon here on Monday, September 29th, 2014. In the background here, you can hear the Overby Family Band. Lots of fun. They'll be in town this weekend as part of Falltoberfest. So I'll bring them down here a little bit. With me now in the studio is Mr. Sergey Morrison. Welcome, Sergey. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited for Falltoberfest this weekend.
It should be
lots of fun. It is. So let's see, you're on the Alaska Folk Festival Board of Directors. Where was the inspiration for doing a fall-style folk festival?
Well,
or event, I should say.
It must be about 10, probably 10 years now. I recall it was soon after I got to town, there used to be this event called November Fest. And took place in November, go figure, and it was put on as a fundraiser for the festival, and I didn't know much about it, but I didn't know many people here in town, but I remember going, and it was, at the time, the old Elks Hall, or the Elks Hall,
right,
which is now the Rockwell Ballroom, and I just remember it was a blast, and there was people of all ages there, and it was just a lot of fun, and, you know, the Folk Fest, we obviously put on this one very large festival once a year, and we spend about 9 months out of the year, you know, getting ready for it. But
a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. But there's some time, you know, especially this time, you know, we're just kind of getting going, and so it's a good time to, you know, to produce a concert, or in this case, just a little mini fest. And I'd been wanting to do this for several years, and finally, the stars just aligned that, you know, I seemed like I found a good weekend that a lot of people were available, you know, musician wise, and the board was into supporting it, and so I decided, yeah, let's do this, and got the board on board, and contacted some musicians in the Rockwell, Deb Berry there at the Rockwell, she's been, was very gracious and you know, donated the hall to us. And so that's a big help for us, you know, because we are it is a fundraiser. So we're trying to raise funds for the festival, which on average costs us about 30 grand a year to put on. So, we need funds to make it, keep it free. So
I like your story there, how it was sort of an introduction to you, to the folk scene in Juneau. What month did you move to Juneau? Do you remember?
I moved here September 16th, 2002.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, that was, you didn't get to see the folk festival until the following spring. So.
Right. Yeah. So it was pretty neat.
Yeah. Call out here to anybody new to Juneau. This would be a great way to see the folk scene here in Juneau, that's for sure. And you have some fun bands involved with this. How do you choose those?
Well, I got together with a couple other board members, and we just kind of went through, you know, we wanted to do a mix. My idea was that it would be kind of a little showcase of bands from around Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's so many bands, we're just so lucky. But so I kind of, or we honed in on, you know, some bands that we knew of, that I, you know, like the two that we're bringing in, the Overby Family Band and Cold Country, they both had a real big presence down here at the folk festival this year. I know that Cold Country did a at 360 show, and so I just thought, well, wouldn't it be neat to have them down here in a kind of more intimate environment than either out at a bar or the 15 minutes on stage. And so we got them, and they were both available and willing to come down. And then I looked at some of the local talent we have around town here. The Great Alaska Bluegrass Band, who, Scott here is a part of. And then, they've been playing for how long? Probably.
I don't even remember.
Good answer. Me neither. Long time. And they, you know, once again, you get to, you know, people get to see them at a bar or a concert here and there, but this is going to be, just a little different, a little more special than a bar.
How do you picture, what's the scene going to look like upstairs?
Well, I'm right after here, I'm going to meet with Betsy Sims, our sound person, and Amanda Filori, who's going to help me kind of deck the room out there. And so I want it to be comfortable for everyone. So for one, it's just going to have a real warm feel to it, lighting wise, and nothing fancy, but just warm. And then there's going to be chairs for people who want to sit and don't feel like dancing, or just don't want to dance, or take a break. But those chairs will be oriented in a way where they're going to get great sight lines towards the stage. And then there's also, there'll be a dance floor as well, which won't impede the people sitting view, but will also be close up to the stage as well, so that there's that connection of the band to the dancers, which I think is real important. So,
best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Sit and relax or dance. And
totally. And then there'll be, you know, more casual in the back. We'll have some of like the tall tables set up there. You know, it's a all ages event. If you're 21 and over though, there'll be, you know, beer and wine for sale. And then, it's a restaurant as well, so there's food, so you can get a quick bite, you can have a sit down dinner, and then we're also, I have to confirm this, but I know, I'm almost sure that on Saturday we're gonna have dinner time music downstairs in Rockwell. Chris Eli Jones and Lindy Jones of Honky Tonk Habit, their band is playing on Friday night, but we're trying to put together a dinner time set, just acoustic set with just the two of them.
Nice.
On Saturday night, like 6 o'clock.
Okay.
So.
And this whole thing fires up this Friday at 7 p.m.
Yep, 7. So real quick, it's on Friday, it's Tramwreck at 7 o'clock from Gus Davis.
We
got the Overby Family Band, and then we got Honky Tonk Habit, and our master of ceremonies is going to be C. Scott Fry. And he's going to be up there and doing some songs in between the bands. And then Saturday, starts at 7. We got Rumblefish, old-time string band. We got the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band. And then finishing it off, we got Todd Grebe and Cold Country. And Jason Overby from the Overby Family Band will be the master of some ceremonies on Saturday.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. And tickets you can get at AlaskaFolkFestival.org, right?
Yeah, it just shows a link. It goes to the Vendini, the same thing that everyone uses, the Vendini site. You can get either. We're trying to be great if you want to come for both nights. So it's $20 for one night. Or if you want to come both nights, it's $30. And we'll just have wristbands for that. And real quick, another thing just to put out there is, we our merchandise this year, the Ray Troll artwork for the 40th, extremely popular, sold out of everything except like small kids T-shirts. So we did a limited reprinting of that, and we're gonna have some of that merchandise for sale, just you know, as part of our fundraiser, and for anyone who didn't get their hands on some, this will be a great chance because this will be it. We'll never print it again after this. So.
Well, this all sounds like a ton of fun. If you want more information, go to AlaskaFolkFestival.org. Otherwise, we will see you on Friday night, 7 p.m.
Oh,
at
yeah.
the Rockwell Ballroom. Sure to be a good time. Sergey Morrison, thank you very much for your time today.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.